Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Coleman.
Hey, 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 what is up? It's Monty. Welcome to episode 289. So glad you joined me. I appreciate it. And I'm probably going to jump around today from topic to topic and just be kind of random. But a lot of what I'm going to do on this episode is answer a lot of your questions and read your comments. And so let's get things started with a question from Paul Stenning, who said, "Hey, Monty, how's it going?"
That's a question that's been raised by a lot of people around the country.
Well, thanks for asking, Paul. It's been going pretty good. Well, at least for the last few days. Because for a few weeks there, I was about to lose my mind. And the reason is, as a lot of you already know, because I talked about it on the last episode, my Monty's Rockcast website kept getting hacked, and I paid GoDaddy a couple of $100 to upgrade the security, and that didn't help. And I tried all the usual stuff, like changing my password over and over, and I updated the site, I updated plugins, and I still got hacked. And so I would call GoDaddy again, and they would tell me, we'll remove some malware. And I'd be like, okay, well, hopefully that fixes it. And then the next morning, I would wake up and there'd be about 8 to 10 posts about God knows what written in Italian.
Ah!
And about the 10th time this happened, I was just irate. And so I call GoDaddy at about 5 in the morning. And I sit there on hold and I finally get a tech support guy that sounds like he's from India. And he says, "Okay, how can I help you?" And I tell him, "Well, I'm getting hacked over and over, and I paid you guys to help stop this, and you've done nothing." And he says, "Okay, well, what is happening?" And I said, "Okay, well, they're hacking in somehow, and they're leaving posts, and they're leaving comments that have nothing to do with my site." And then he says, and I'm not kidding you, "Oh, well, then you're not being hacked."
What?
And it was then that I just lost it. And I said, "Okay, well, you obviously don't get it. I'm just going to call back and try to get somebody else." And I just hung up and I called right back and sat on hold. And I finally get a new guy from tech support. And he's also from India.
Don't!
And I tell him, "Listen, I've been hacked over and over. You guys aren't doing anything. I want my money back, and I'll just have to find another host."
Oh, freak boy, calm down.
Well, he starts asking me the typical questions, like what happened. And I'll be honest, I was pretty snippy with him. But he stays calm, and he starts looking through my site. And he puts me on hold for a while, and then he comes back. And he finally tells me, "I see that you've got several different login names on here." And I said, "No, I'm the only one that works on this site." And he finally says, "Okay, well, do you want me to delete those other people?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Okay, well, that was probably how they were getting in." And I thought, oh my God, that's why it never mattered if I changed my password. They had their own. And he said, "Oh yes, probably so." And so I thanked him for helping me, and I also apologized for getting snippy. And my site has not been hacked since then. Now, if it happens again before I finish recording this episode, I'll give you an update. But for now, as I speak, I have rid myself of those bastards made of human excrement. And to whoever you were, thanks a lot for making my life miserable there for a while. And all I can say is, I'll pray for you that you burn in hell.
What's wrong with people?
Paul Stenning also had a couple of comments about the last episode. about that list that Variety put out of the 100 best comedy movies of all time. He said, I couldn't believe they left off Animal House. And I thought, oh my God, yeah, Animal House. I completely forgot that one. But they left a lot of stuff off that I thought should have been on there. And they also put some stuff on there that I just didn't get. Plus, there was a lot of movies that I hadn't seen at all. And one day, Alex suggested that we watch Bridget Jones' Diary. And it was one that was on the list that I hadn't seen. And so I went, all right. And so we watch it and we get through. And I go, well, that was a nice little romantic movie. But it wasn't funny at all to me. And I thought, well, if you're going to have a movie on there like that, what about The Sure Thing or Say Anything? Those John Cusack movies that were not only good, but they were funny. And a couple others that I thought of later that weren't on the list that I thought were great. One was Summer School, and that starred the great Dean Cameron, who is now a friend of mine on Facebook. I also liked She's Having a Baby. I thought that was cute and funny. And a movie that wasn't cute, but I found hilarious in a very dark way, was called The Vampire's Kiss with Nicolas Cage. It's not really scary. It's just about a guy that's sick in the head.
It was a joy to watch.
And finally, after hearing my review of the new Megadeth album, Paul wanted to tell me a story about Megadeth. He said back in 1990, he skipped school at the age of 14 to go meet them for a Rust in Peace signing session. And Paul said he was all excited, but when they got there, they were late and they walked in wearing shades and just sat down and none of them smiled or said a word to anyone. In other words, they were just a bunch of dicks. Yeah, Paul, I hear ya, and this is the reason why I always try to be as nice as I can to any fans or people who interview me. Because if you're not, that is the only thing they will remember about you for the rest of your life, is that you were a jerk. And it could have been that the guys in Megadeth were just having a bad day. And I actually understand that because when you're on tour, you know, sometimes the hours that you're keeping are really weird. And maybe you didn't get a lot of sleep the night before and you got up late and you're just not feeling that great. And your tour manager says, okay, you've got an interview with a fanzine. Or there's people waiting for you the second you step off the bus and you're just really wanting to chill. But I always try and do my best not to be rude, to be gracious, because after all, without these people, you wouldn't have any kind of career at all. So I try and be as nice as I can to fans and to anybody trying to interview me, and treat them like I wish other musicians would treat me. Kind of like when I met Chris Cornell. If he had just said, hey man, nice to meet you. You know, that's all he would have had to do, and I would have loved him forever. But he wasn't nice, and he didn't do any of that, and when I walked away, I just thought, wow, what a jerk. And to this day, I still think, wow, great musician, but man, couldn't he have just said anything? But whatever, hopefully no one out there thinks I'm a dick, but if you do, I'm sorry. I'll try better next time. But as far as Megadeth these days, I know James, their bass player, is a really nice guy, and Dirk is the nicest, coolest rock star I've ever met. And I'm sure Dave Mustaine has probably matured since the 90s. But I'm not sure I want to meet him because, you know, he's one of my metal heroes. And if he wasn't nice to me, I think I'd be really disappointed and, you know, remember him that way forever. So I don't want that.
No one wants that.
All right, next I got an email from John Paul, who I like to refer to as John Paul George Ringo. And Mr. George Ringo says, hey, Monty. How's the new digs? And I actually had to look up the term digs because I was not familiar with that. And it turns out it refers to your house. And well, John Paul, our new digs is not new. It was actually built in the 70s. but it's new to us and we really like it. Alex has done a great job fixing the place up. She has filled it full of plants and photos, and we also put up a bunch of my paintings. And I posted a picture on Facebook of our jam room, and a guy left a comment saying, "Your place in Texas looks pretty nice. I was expecting to see a trailer or something, given how much you talk about your money issues." Yeah, well, I probably am a little too honest on this show. And when I ask people to go to my website, MontyColvinArt.com, and support my art and music and this podcast, it may sound lame to some people, but what can I say? I gotta make a living. But as far as the house, we really like it, but it's nothing extravagant because we're certainly not wealthy, and I never have been. And it's funny he should mention trailer because I actually grew up in a trailer. Up until I was about 12 years old, my mom and dad and my brother and I all lived in a two-bedroom trailer in a trailer park in Phoenix, Arizona. My dad was an upholsterer and didn't make a ton of money, and so we lived in a trailer, and I was fine with it. That's all I knew, that was home, and I was a happy kid. And since then, I've lived on a farm, I've lived in old houses, and crappy little one-bedroom apartments. And for a while, back in the early 2000s, I got to live in that big, brand new house. But you know what? The whole time I lived in that big house, I was absolutely miserable. So for me, it's not the structure or the house or the apartment or even the state you're living in. It's the state of mind that you live in. And if you're fulfilled by what you're doing, or you feel loved by the person you're with, or by God, those are the things that matter and can truly make you happy.
Very pointed and provocative commentary.
Okay, I'm going to randomly switch now to stuff that I've been watching on TV and not watching on TV. And the first thing that I did watch was a movie called The Smashing Machine.
Brutal!
And it stars Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. And I'm usually kind of 50-50 on him. A lot of times he'll come out with a movie where it looks like just a lot of car chases. And I'm usually like, yeah, I'll pass. But in this one, it was about the early days of the full contact karate, wrestling, boxing, whatever you call that stuff. And I've kind of been getting into that lately. Every Saturday night on Paramount Plus, they've been having these cage match events. They're usually championship fights, and of course, I don't know who any of these people are, but it's totally brutal, and I've kind of been fascinated by it. And so when I saw this movie was kind of about that, I thought, all right, I'm going to give this a shot. And the weird thing is that The Rock doesn't even look like himself. They put all these prosthetics on him, and he looks like a different guy. But it's based on a true story, and a lot of it deals with the guy's girlfriend and him, and painkillers and all that. And even though it's 2 hours long, it kind of kept my interest for the whole thing. And the reason it kept my interest is because I thought something really dramatic was going to happen in the end. But all of a sudden the movie ends, and I said, that's it?
That's it!
So, I don't know, I kind of had mixed feelings about it. Overall, it wasn't bad, but it kind of left me wanting more. But either way, it was one of those movies that I just had to watch because of the title. The Smashing Machine sounds like a great name for a metal band. In fact, I wish I would have thought of that. And maybe there's already a band named that, I don't know. But if we would have named ourselves the Smashing Machine instead of Galactic Cowboys, maybe we'd be huge.
No!
Speaking of which, I mentioned on one of the last episodes that I get a lot of people messaging me saying, hey, did you know there's a band out there called Galactic Cowboy Orchestra? And I said, yeah, we know. Even though we were there first, they've been around a while now, and I guess they just didn't check Google when they picked out their name. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I was hanging out with Ben Huggins, and somehow that topic came up. And he said, oh, I guess I never told you. And I said, what? And he said, well, back when you were doing Crunchy and Galactic wasn't really doing anything, one of those guys from Galactic Cowboy Orchestra messaged me. And he said, we've got this name that's similar to yours. Would you mind if we went ahead and used it? And Ben told him, yeah, whatever, go ahead, knock yourself out. So as it turns out, they do know who we are and they got a hold of us. And so that's an update on that. I suppose the names are technically different, so whatever.
Nobody cares.
Something else I've been watching is Shrinking on Apple TV. And so far, it's pretty good. It's funny and the acting's good. But of course, it has to have a certain amount of wokeness. Why? Because it's Apple TV and it comes from Hollywood. So you have to have over-the-top flaming gays, belligerent, hateful children, and bossy feminist women. And then if you're a white male on TV, you're going to be portrayed as stupid, or at the least, weak and gullible. And for the most part, I can just try and ignore all that stuff and just watch and enjoy it for what it is. But it still just really annoys me how the left insists on beating me in the face with their depictions of how they think society should be. And they're not going to change me. I know how I feel and what I think. But it's the youth that I'm kind of concerned about, because they're being brainwashed. And it's not just the media, it's also modern day parenting. And the other day I saw something that disgusted me, but at the same time kind of cracked me up. And it was some TikTok video of these teenagers on the street protesting ICE. And this guy videoing walks up to this girl, she looks about 17, and he says, what are you protesting? And she's like, I'm protesting ICE. And he says, why? And she says, because ICE is stupid, bruh. And there was a girl next to her, and she said, yeah, F ICE, F Trump. And he said, well, what's ICE doing? And she said, they're taking American citizens and locking them up. And then you see this mom come up behind him and go, yeah, F Trump, F ICE, F everything. And then it became apparent to me that these are moms that stay home and watch The View or Morning Joe, and they don't really have a clue what they're even doing out there. And all this moral superiority over ICE and illegal immigrants has just snowballed. And it's become a religion where you think Trump is the devil and your salvation comes from protecting brown people who are here illegally, even if those brown people are rapists and murderers. And the other night on TV, they had a big old church service crusade called the Grammys and halftime of the Super Bowl. And where do I begin with the Grammys? First of all, I did not watch it, but I saw all the highlights. And I don't watch it because I know what it is now. It's all bullshit, it's all rigged, and it has been since they gave Best New Artist to Milli Vanilli. So none of the awards mean anything to me. I mean, they gave the award for Best Metal Band to Turnstile. And I don't have a problem with Turnstile, but they're not metal, and apparently the Grammys do not know this. So it's all a joke, and I'm not going to spend any time talking about the musical acts. But the thing I just can't tolerate anymore are these Hollywood celebrities and celebrity musicians. And I don't know why it has to be this way, but apparently to be in the music business and have any kind of success, you have to at least act like you're a leftist and say all the talking points and be part of their club. And as long as you stay in that club, you will get nominated and win awards, and you can go up and give little speeches. And this year it just got really embarrassing. You had people like Bad Bunny saying, all I want to say is ICE out. It is better to love than hate. And those idiots in the crowd just jumped to their feet and clapped like a bunch of trained seals. Like that was the most profound shit they'd ever heard in their lives. And then you got that dimwit Billie Eilish saying, no one is illegal on stolen land. And once again, the crowd just loves it and they go crazy. And my biggest takeaway from all that is that getting up there and saying those things takes zero guts. You are not brave to say ice out in front of a bunch of liberals. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. You come off looking like a moronic puppet. And I'm in no way a fan of Jelly Roll, but I at least respected the fact that he got up there and thanked God and Jesus. Because those Grammy people had to be sitting there going, what the hell is this? Well, I don't think he's coming back next year. And that's where a lot of my disdain comes for all of this. None of it's about music anymore. None of it's about sports. It's all just an agenda. And the root of all of it just seems to be like it's become anti-God. And in a lot of cases, it's become anti-white, anti-Christian, anti-borders, anti-law. And it's just ironic and crazy to me that the same people a few years ago who were saying you have to get vaccinated, you have to wear a mask, and no one is above the law, are now saying we got to get rid of ICE because they wear masks and they're trying to enforce the law and arrest criminals.
Huh?
Sorry, you may not agree with me and hate me for having an opinion, but it just doesn't make sense to me. But actually, it kind of does, because I know what these people are trying to do. They're trying to destroy everything, and that's pretty much what they did with the Super Bowl this year. And unfortunately, I did watch the game, and it sucked. But when it was time for Bugs Bunny at halftime, I turned it off. It was my little protest. It was kind of like that ice out protest a few weeks ago when you weren't supposed to go shopping all weekend. Yeah, well, Alex and I basically protested the protest by going to the mall here in Houston with a few thousand Hispanics and went shopping. And so instead of watching the Super Bowl halftime propaganda show, I turned over to that American country halftime on YouTube. And I gotta say, I'm not a country music fan, but most of it was really good. The one thing about country music that's good these days is those Nashville players are really outstanding. And I appreciated that they took a stand for America, which is more than I can say about some of the US athletes at the Olympics. To hear them say that they're not proud to represent their country because they can't agree with, quote, what's going on with our government right now, made me say, well, I probably won't be watching the Olympics this year. Except for the U.S. and Canadian hockey teams.
Well, yeah.
All right, thanks for letting me get some of that stuff off my chest. Let's get back to some of your questions and emails. And I've got one here from a guy who has been a longtime listener. And he's a musician, and one year he won my top 10 playoffs contest. And he has always just sent me such great podcast material that I finally, years ago, just wrote him a theme song. And it's none other than Jimmy G in Chicago.
He's from Chicago. He's a champion. He's got some questions.
All right, Jimmy G today has sent me a bunch of random questions. The first one being, hey, Monty, how is life in Houston? Well, Jimmy, you know, when we made the move from Colorado, I had high hopes. I thought the move would be good for us. We'd see some old friends, we'd make some new friends, and hopefully there would be some new opportunities, but you just never know. But I gotta say, after a couple of months, I love it. It's really good to be back. The traffic's kinda bad at times, but you know, you deal with it. And for the most part, I'm a homebody anyway. I work from home, And Alex and I like to take the dog out and walk around the neighborhood. And our neighbors are nice, and people here seem a little more friendly. So I'm liking it. Now, along those same lines, Jimmy G says, I hear Houston smells like oil. Is that true? You know, Jimmy, I haven't really noticed, but I do know that it does not smell like pot like Colorado did. Good grief, you couldn't walk outside of your apartment without smelling it. In fact, you could smell pot in your apartment that was coming up through the vents from your neighbor down below. I mean, you could smell it in your car with the windows rolled up. It was everywhere. Maybe that's why no one said hello in Colorado. They were all so stoned, they didn't even notice you.
Right.
Next question from Jimmy is, how's the food in Houston? Are there any delicacies that the rest of us should know about? You know, Alex and I have noticed that it seems like there must be a million restaurants in Houston. And you can get just about anything you want. The main thing here in town that I've noticed is just a ton of Mexican restaurants. And there's a lot of good ones, but the truth is that Alex and I really don't go out that much. On what I make as an artist and musician, we really can't afford to go out that much. Plus, we kind of just like eating at home. Alex is a really good cook, and she just spoils me to death. Makes me all kinds of Chinese food and stuff that I really like. And since we moved here, I got a grill, and we grill all the time. And my favorite is barbecued ribs or pork steaks.
That's not healthy.
Jimmy also had a couple of questions that are art-related. And the first one is, will the humidity in Houston change the way you paint your portraits? Like, does it take longer for the paint to dry? Well, having lived here in the 90s, I know that humidity is always a factor. If you walk outside, it feels like somebody threw a blanket over the top of you. And so in the summer especially, the humidity will probably make me want to stay inside and work more. But I use acrylics, and so I don't really think it affects it much because acrylic paint dries almost immediately. And I kind of like that, actually. Jimmy also said, I notice you use a lot of purple in your paintings. Do you have a favorite color? Well, I like all colors, but I tend to use a lot of purple and black. I like dark blacks because it pushes the light colors and tones forward. And it helps with definition. And then I use a lot of purples and magentas and pinks for skin tones. And that's just because I find that more fun and visually pleasing.
It is just weird.
Next, Jimmy has a few questions music related. And he wants to know if Galactic Cowboys are planning a record release party with a live show. Well, that's a tough one because we don't have really any plans right now at all. We just want to get this album out as soon as we can. But as far as playing shows, we don't even have a drummer right now. However, we are looking, and I talked to a guy the other day that's phenomenal. We'll see if he works out. But we just have to take things one step at a time before we start planning shows. Right now, the new album is mixed and mastered, but still not ready to be released. But hopefully we'll have some news on that soon. What we might have to do is put it out digitally at first and then have it manufactured later. But we'll see. Jimmy also asked, have you started writing any new tunes for the next album? Well, come on, Jimmy. Would you at least let us get this new one out first before you start wanting something more? But yeah, actually, I have started writing some new tunes. I haven't started recording any demos yet, but I've got all kinds of ideas. And somebody asked me the other day if my writing process is different now than it was back in the early 90s when we did the first couple albums. And I told him, yes, actually it is. Back then, I used one of those little tape recorders where you push down the two buttons. And that was fine. You know, you could record a riff or a melody idea. But I was putting those onto a cassette, and then when you wanted to find that idea, you had to kind of randomly scroll back through, and so it was a little more difficult. But for years now, I've just been using my iPhone. And what I do is I just turn the video camera on and I video myself singing the idea or the riff. Or sometimes if I'm playing guitar, I'll just set the video up and video what I'm playing. And that way I don't forget. And then I take all those video clips and I put them into a folder. And it's real easy then just to go back through and listen to some of that stuff and remember, oh yeah, I like that. And for some reason here lately, I'm just getting all kinds of ideas in my head. And I don't really know where they come from other than maybe it's a gift or maybe just a God thing. I think God can give you ideas. And I watch a lot of interviews with musicians on YouTube. Mainly because I'm interested in what other musicians think. And recently I watched a couple of Billy Corgan's shows where he interviewed Nancy Wilson and the drummer for the Cowsills. And I even watched a Rick Beato with Flea. And all three of them talked about how they were very influenced by their parents. They grew up in a house where, you know, their dad played jazz or their parents sang a lot. Or that they were just surrounded by a lot of music. But they also said, you know, it just kind of comes from a place that they can't explain. It's like a God thing. And I know for me, I grew up with parents that sang in the church choir. And they encouraged me to sing and do harmonies. And then once I learned how to play guitar, I got the writing bug. And I just continued to work on it for the next 40 years or so. And so, yeah, I've already started compiling some song ideas for what I hope will be another album someday. And I gotta say, I can't wait to do another one. I almost feel like we just kind of got started. And I feel like anything we do in the future will probably be even better. But we're gonna try and get this new one out first and see how it does. Jimmy also wanted to ask, are you going to tell us what gear you use to record the upcoming album? Okay, well, you know, I'm not a big gearhead like I know a lot of you guys are, but I can tell you that I used a Galeon Kruger 800 Legacy bass head. And the reason why I got one of those is back in the 80s when I was playing with this guy Morgan Cryer, I had a GK head and it killed. It just had this growl to it. And it eventually broke and I ended up going to Ampegs and Mesa Boogies. But before we started to record this album, I thought, you know, I've never gotten a tone low end wise like I did with that GK head. And so I ended up getting the Galeon Kruger 800 and man, I love it. And in the studio, I played it through an SVT cabinet. And then for my high end, I used my Boogie rectifier. And to me, it's the best bass tone I've ever put down on a record. It cuts through the mix, but doesn't swallow up all the guitar frequencies. And it's just so punchy. It sounds like you're being run over by a freight train.
Oh, that is so nice.
And finally, Jimmy says, do you have a favorite track on the new record? You know, this one's been tough to pick out a favorite for me because I love all the songs. I think they're all really strong, and I probably have 6 or 7 that are my favorites. But if you forced me to pick one, I don't know. There's a ballad that I wrote called Love Rehab, and by ballad, I don't mean wimpy, but that one really came out great. It's kind of personal to me because it was about a hard time I went through in my life. And it may be the best slow song ballad that I've ever written. And the guys really like it and they sang and played their asses off on it. And I'm really proud of that one. But there's just so many songs that I can't wait for you to hear because they not only crush, but they're just so melodic. I mean, I could hear some of these on the radio. And I'll just give you a little sample of what I'm talking about. I'm not going to play you the whole thing, but here's a little taste of a song called Blinders. It's got the heavy riffs that just punch you in the face, but then you get the killer chorus, and to me, it's just classic GC. Alright, there you go. Just a little taste. I don't want to give you too much too soon. I mean, you might have a premature eargasm.
Hit me with more! Come on! Come on! Let's go!
Well, alright. Just a little more. Oh man, I cannot wait till you can hear the whole thing. It's just so good.
Well, you gotta give us more, you gotta give us more.
No, that's probably all I should play for now.
Please!
Well, okay. Before I go on, I wanted to thank everyone who has visited my website, MontyColvinArt.com, and thank a few of you who have ordered stuff. Thanks to Justin Greiner for ordering my crunchy CDs. Thank you, Brian Motley, for ordering the Ty Tabor print. And thanks to Matt Caslow in Brooklyn, who orders a set of my refrigerator magnets every month. And I think he keeps some of them, but he also gives a lot of them away to his friends. Because, you know, my art makes great gifts. And if you don't see something on my website that you would like, then just commission me. I do family portraits, I do cats, dogs, you name it, and I also do rock stars. For instance, William Butts recently emailed me and said, "Hey Monty, I'd really like a painting of the drummer for Striper, Robert Sweet." And after he told me what he was looking for and what size painting he wanted, I shot him a price. He said, "Awesome, let's do it." I got it done and he loved it. And he said, "I can't wait to put this up on my wall next to all my other Striper stuff." So thanks again, William. I really appreciate the work. And I really love it when I get to do rock star paintings. And I don't just do really famous rock stars and musicians. I also do people who are great, but maybe underappreciated. Like, I've done Wayne Static from Static X. I just finished a Peter Steele from Typo Negative. And I'm currently working on a Michael Schenker. And where else are you gonna get stuff like that? And so I love painting rock stars because, let's face it, I always wanted to be one. And speaking of rock stars, the other day I found another one of those all-time lists. And this one was from Spin Magazine. It's the greatest rock stars since that was a thing. And it's written by Bob Guccione Jr., whose dad was famous for running Penthouse magazine. And so if I hate this list, which I'm pretty sure I will, I know who to blame.
He's horrible.
Now, when I start looking at a list like this, or say, you know, the 100 best comedies of all time, I always wonder, okay, well, what was the criteria or what's your definition? Like, when I hear the word rock star, I don't think Barbara Streisand, but I think Elvis maybe, possibly the biggest rock star ever. And so I'm immediately a little confused when I see that Elvis is dead last at 100. So to me, this is not a good start, especially when I see that Gary Puckett is ahead of him. But here's one right off the bat that I'm completely confused by. It's Bono at 98. I mean, I think Bono's the biggest douchebag rock star ever, but yeah, he's a gigantic rock star. And he's at 98? Wow, where do we go from here? Well, you got Tina Turner, and then you got Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees. Yeah, sorry, Bono. Mickey's a bigger rock star than you. Now, at 95, if you're talking rock stars, David Lee Roth, he's pretty much the definition of rock star.
Oh, yes!
I'd have thought he'd have been in the top 10.
Yeah!
But here he is down at the bottom.
Oh!
That's ridiculous, even though he kind of sucks now, if we're being honest.
Ugh!
94 is Frank Zappa, and next, holy shit, Paul McCartney at 93?
What?
I'm sorry, but that made me cuss a little bit. Is this list in reverse?
Come on!
Yes, Paul McCartney was a rock star, a genius, one of the greatest musicians of all time, but apparently not as much as Brian Jones at 92. And here's another one of those where maybe I just don't understand what a rock star is, because at 91 is Axl Rose. Love him or hate him, he's the definition of rock star. But then you got people like Steven Van Zandt, John Fogerty, Keith Emerson, Jerry Garcia, Liam Gallagher, Otis Redding. And then, hang on, 84 is Lemmy. I mean, thanks for putting him on the list, Bob, but Lemmy is an icon. He should have been top 10. And just as a side note, I recently did a Lemmy painting that's on my website. Check it out.
Oh, it's awesome!
At 83, you got Paul Westerberg from The Replacements. I agree, he's great. Amazing songwriter, tons of attitude. Then you got Morrissey, Ritchie Blackmore, David Byrne, and Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins. But number 78 gives us something to talk about because it's Madonna. Now, my opinion on her is that I would not consider her a rock star. She's a pop star, an absolute famous icon, and many other horrible things I won't talk about. But she really didn't have anything to do with rock and roll. Unlike 77, Alice Cooper. That guy was and still is a rocker. And he is way too low on this list. But Spin Magazine is very alternative, kind of liberal and trendy. And I guess that's why you've got people on here like Nick Cave and Bob Mould. Number 74 is Sid Vicious. If you're going to go punk, I would have gone with my cousin or somebody from the Ramones. But maybe they'll be on here later. I don't know. 73, Buddy Holly. And 72 is Ozzy Osbourne. Oh, Mr. Guccione, are you out of your freaking mind? Ozzy's in the 70s?
I'm outraged!
But if that wasn't insulting enough, number 71 is Jane Weiland. Yes, from the Go-Go's, ahead of Ozzy.
I find this offensive.
Oh well, rounding out the 70s is Don Henley from the Eagles. Then you got Roger Daltrey, Iggy Pop, and at 67 is Keith Moon. Yeah, I would say driving a Rolls Royce into a swimming pool kind of makes you a rock star, so I'll agree, totally. Then you got Ray Davies, Trent Reznor, Eric Burdon, and then at 63 you got Gwen Stefani. Okay, hold on. Ozzy and Lemmy just rolled over in their graves. Okay, continuing on, you got Leslie West from Mountain. You got, what a rocker. 61 is Aretha Franklin. Yeah, when I think of rockers, I think Aretha.
What's going on with that?
But at 60, it's Duane Allman. And then at 59, Tom York. Let's see, Tom York. Apparently, he's one of the greatest rock stars of all time. And I'm looking. Oh, he's in Radiohead.
Oh.
Oh, well, of course, Radiohead. What, you don't know who Radiohead is? Oh, well, what's wrong with you? Apparently, you don't know as much about music as I do. Because I just love Radiohead. Radiohead, they're genius.
Really?
Moving on, we got Chuck D from Public Enemy. Then at 57, you got Tom Petty, Slash, iconic rock star. Then Little Richard, Carlos Santana, Stevie Ray Vaughan's on this list. And then at 52 is David Thomas. Okay, well, I'm not real sure who Dave Thomas is, but apparently he's bigger than Elvis. But, oh yeah, now I remember. Dave Thomas owns Wendy's. Yeah, okay, now it makes sense.
Totally.
51 is John Bon Jovi, and at 50, it's John Lennon. Yeah, sorry, John, if you would have just tried a little harder while you were alive, maybe written a few good songs, or maybe started a band that became huge. Maybe we could have put you into the, I don't know, top 25. But now we're in the 40s. We got Roger Waters, Syd Barrett, Peter Gabriel, Elton John, big superstar there. And I'm not being sarcastic, Elton John is awesome. He's legendary, and so is Jim Morrison, who I didn't really care for the Doors that much, but yeah, big rock star. 44 is Johnny Winter. 43 is Jeff Beck, and then one of my favorite rock stars of all time, James Hetfield. And it's not just his songwriting or his playing, but those early pictures of him with the long hair and the Explorer guitar. I mean, there may have never been a cooler looking rock star ever.
Who could disagree?
41, Chris Cornell, of course. 40, Chuck Berry. 39, Eminem. I would consider him a rapper, not a rocker, but whatever. But if you've got Jane Whelan ahead of Ozzy Osbourne, who really cares?
No one.
Next, you got John Bonham, then Joe Strummer, then Mick Jones from The Clash, then Neil Young, and at 34, you got Jimmy Cliff. Yeah, this is one of those critics' choices where you've got an uppity writer that wants to prove how smart he is, and he picks someone that no one, and I mean no one, would ever pick. And if you polled, I'm going to say 5,000 people, not one of them would have Jimmy Cliff on the all-time rock star list. But here he is at 34. But at 33, yeah, I would say Robert Plant is an iconic rock star, as is Eric Clapton. At 31, it's Eddie Van Halen, possibly the greatest rock guitarist in history. But according to Spin Magazine, just not quite as good as Ike Turner.
Are you kidding?
Now, I'm not sure if Ike ever drove a car into a swimming pool, but I'm pretty sure he beat the hell out of Tina Turner. So, definite rock star move.
Bravo!
But at 29, you get another one of these hipper-than-thou critics' choices. It's Tom Waits. And I understand I don't have to get it or like it, but one of the greatest rock stars? Really?
I don't think so.
However, I do get the next two. 28 is Steven Tyler, and at 27 is Pete Townsend. Oh my God, that guy changed my life. When I saw the video and film of him jumping and sliding across the stage, I said, that's what I want to be. That's what I got to do. But at no point did I ever say at 26, yeah, Van Morrison, oh man, that guy. If I could just be Van Morrison. No. But Phil Lynott liked him, so moving on. 25 is Chrissy Hynde. Yeah, she was cool, but probably on hair so high because she was a chick. As is the same case with 24, Joan Jett. And don't get me wrong, I love Joan Jett. But if we're being honest, come on. She's on here because she's female. But 23 is Stevie Wonder, and then you've got it again at 22, Sinead O'Connor.
You cannot be serious!
Yeah, I'm trying to think of all those great Sinead O'Connor songs. She tore up a picture of the Pope. Gotcha. And she was female. But moving on to 21, it's Gene Simmons. 20 is that douchebag John Mellencamp. 19 is Ann Wilson from Heart. 18 is Dave Grohl. 17 is Stevie Nicks. And at 16 is Freddie Mercury. And to me, that's too low, especially when at 15, you've got Eddie Vedder. And I understand he's a big-time rock star for his time, but if I was going to put him on this list, it would have been around the 90s. At 14, it's Debbie Harry from Blondie. At 13 is The Edge. And to me, that's just insane. You're going to put The Edge way, way above Bono? Really? Okay, whatever. 12 is Bob Marley. 11 is Janis Joplin. 10 is Kurt Cobain. And then at 9, Grace Slick.
No!
Yeah.
No!
And did you notice when we got to the upper part of this list, there all of a sudden was a whole bunch of women? And yes, I've heard of Grace Slick, and I've also heard Grace Slick sing. And I wish I hadn't.
You're mean.
But what the hell is she doing on a list that has Mick Jagger at number 8, Bob Dylan at 7, Bruce Springsteen at 6? Oh, God, I hate that guy now.
What a douche.
David Bowie is at 5, Jimmy Page 4, Jimi Hendrix is at 3, Prince is at 2, and at number 1, can you guess? Well, it's Keith Richards. And I guess if you take into consideration all the damage he's done to his body and yet he's still alive, I guess that qualifies you as a pretty big rock star.
I guess.
Now, who are some of the people who did not make this list? Well, I thought of just a couple. How about Nikki Sixx? The guy died and then came back to life. Definite rock star move. How about Bon Scott, Phil Lynott, and Dee Dee Ramone? They were so over-the-top rock stars that they did die. And then, oh, I don't know, maybe Marilyn Manson, Dave Mustaine, Rob Halford, Ted Nugent, and Johnny Rotten. And we also should not forget that Dimebag Darrell, Paul Stanley, Ace Frehley, Ronnie James Dio, and Angus Young were not on this list, but Gary Puckett was. Nice job, Spin Magazine.
This was terrible.
I'm going to finish up things now with a message I got on Facebook Messenger from Darren Smith. And Darren says, I love your artwork. have you considered doing a print on demand for t-shirts? Well, yes, that's a good idea, Darren, and I've been thinking about t-shirts for a long time. And so Alex and I started looking into the whole print on demand thing, and we've been working on it together, and hopefully you'll be able to get my artwork on t-shirts and printed on demand very soon.
Oh, goody!
All right, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I got a little political, but, you know, I want you to know I'm not racist. I love Mexican people. I just don't want them being here illegally. So I'm going to play you out with a song that will prove I'm not racist, and it will also be kind of an apology to Bono for calling him a douchebag.
It was uncalled for.
But that's going to do it for me for now. I will return soon with more fun and mayhem. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like unless it's me. And
rock on.
Uno, dos, tres, catorce. Hola, señoritas, y señores. Me llamo Ricardo Queso. Let's mambo.
Believe the news today. Oh, I can't close my eyes and make it go away. How long must we sing this song? How la 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 long? 'Cause tonight we can be as one. Tonight. Broken bottles under Nino's feet. Bodies strewn across that dead-end street. And today the millions cry. We fiesta while tomorrow they die. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Ay, Chihuahua!
Sunday, Domingo, Sangre Domingo. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
The end.